Quentin, thank you so much for spending your evening here with me on How I Got Through It. I'm so excited to talk to you, so excited to have this conversation with you.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you for having me on. It's an honor.
Awesome. So, you know, I want to start the conversation off with when I was doing some research on your life, I get a feel from you that you are in amazement of how things have turned out also for you. And I even read that you quoted Octavia Butler when she talks about she wrote herself into this life. She wrote herself into the present, the future, and the past. And I think I wanted to start the conversation there and ask you, what does that quote mean to you in relation to your life?
Absolutely. Ooh. And it's fascinating. I came across Octavia Butler in my 30s, so very recent. And there's a level of intentionality that I walk in and that I try to live my life by. But I also am a student of chance and a student of luck and of fortune. And I try to make the best of every situation or scenario that is put before me. I mean, I want to be, and I believe in karma, and I believe in also, you know, sowing good seeds. To reap a harvest of some sort. Maybe it's not where you sow, but to reap that harvest at some point in our lives, and to do it generously and do it not expecting anything back. And I think it served me.
Yeah. And it shows, and I think people can feel it too, you know, when they look at you and when we look at you, you know, like retrospect of what you built and your Instagram. And to kind of get an idea of like where you came from, like if you can take us back to 14-year-old Quentin, and what were the two memories that really shaped the way you think?
It's funny. I was reflecting on this question earlier today, and one came immediate to my memory as a 14-year-old high schooler. Mm-hmm. Quiet, to himself quite a bit, very intense about his academics and his studies, particularly in a place where it's not highly regarded as a place mm-hmm. for academic excellence, but it is a place where you had very transformational teachers and people who really cared about you. I would find my voice in a very unique way that was outside of the standard like math and science classes. So I remember one particular class sitting down. We were in class. It's a rambunctious group, so very wild, very rowdy. And we had some sort of art assignment, but our art teacher would let us play our own music. So she had a boombox and she said, hey, you can bring in CDs. As long as it doesn't have a lot of curse words in it, then you'll be good. But I'll never forget, this was when College Dropout came out with Kanye West. And it was this one song in particular called Spaceships. I remember sitting in this class and the class is just wild, right? But when we put on that song or put on the music, we listened to the album through and through, but we were in a groove and that song came on. I just remember being in our class, being really locked into what we were doing and watching everybody just nod their head mm-hmm. as they listened to the song. And they were not just listening and adapting to the beat. They were really internalizing the words and the experiences that were painted in this song. Spaceships is a song around Kanye in particular, talking about his triumph over experiencing very specific traumas and pains as related to growing up as a Black kid mm-hmm. On the South Side of Chicago, particularly being underestimated and being also tokenized and exploited because of who he was. And then you had other featured artists talking about their own personal struggles and traumas. One in particular talked about, you know, tragedy. And I just remember the song being extremely moving for me because I had never heard men talk about their feelings. Mm-hmm. And there's a vulnerability that Kanye was able to do, or at least he made space for vulnerability, but there was, you know, always the masking of bravado. Like, mm-hmm. you know, people would accept it because Kanye had a very masterful way to be himself, to be someone who was a feeler, but mm-hmm. to be around people who, whether it was Massage Noir or whether it was, you know, a very stereotypical rap, hip hop environment, he was able to still be himself, if that makes any sense. And yeah. I just remember aesthetically, like that meaning a lot to me, who was, you know, a person who was creative, had committed his life to be an excellent student with this dream of going to college for free, but not knowing that I could still be myself and not be an archetype of who I thought I was.
And so that memory really, I guess, put a emphasis on the importance of being yourself, right? As a man, and like showing the buffet of feelings that you feel.
Absolutely. And not even recognizing that was that moment. And I remember the colorful characters in that class, and each of them had a story, and it was a spectrum, right? And the men showed up in various ways. They used various ways to express themselves. But at the end of the day, we're all kind of bopping our head mm-hmm. rhythmically to this one song that saw us for who we were mm-hmm. in the many different forms that we were. And I didn't know it at the time that would be kind of a very ingrained to my life pattern and my creative pattern. I just knew that it just stood out to me, and I'll never forget it.
That's incredible. That's an impactful story too. I mean, anyone that hears it, it'll remind them of maybe a similar memory that they feel, that something that jolted them and reminded them to be themselves as well.
Yeah, I remember having a conversation with my twin brother. So I have a twin brother. His name is Nico. And maybe it was a few months ago, we were together. And I said, Nico, what was I like in high school? And he said, well, he said, you were there, but I don't remember you being there. Mm-hmm. And I said, what do you mean? He said, because your body was there, your essence was there, but you were always thinking about what was beyond high school. Mm-hmm. And so that was how you lived your life. You didn't really have deep connections with people. And that makes sense. And I was like, oh, that does. Mm-hmm. Because my most vivid memories in life come from college, not high school. Mm-hmm. High school is kind of a blur, aside from very pivotal moments, I'd say.
Yeah, I get that. I feel also like I just so get this, because for me, so we call it secondary school. I was born in Barbados, and I remember thinking, there's got to be a world beyond this. There's got to be a world beyond the thing, beyond what I see in front of me, right? And I was always thinking about it. I was always thinking about the future. I was always thinking about how to get off this island, actually, you know, and go to college. And then when I got to college, I was able to recreate or create a new persona for myself, a smart version of myself, a version of myself that was impactful, an activist, you know, all these different things that I really did feel like I encompassed. So, you know, and I wonder if it was like that for you, like in college, like why did college feel like such a release or like a new birth of you?
I have very similar sentiments to your experience in high school. I think my reality was I never felt connected to the people that were in my community or even in my environment, because I always felt like maybe I just was different, or I didn't think that I had the same interest or the same loves. And I come to find that, like, when it came to like my people, my culture, sensibilities about like where I'm from, of course, like that is something that I always will hold dear to me. But from an early age, I was indoctrinated to believe that education was the way to actually transcend class, race. It was all about merit. So I believed that, and I internalized it. And I said, this will be how I leave. And then I had the opportunity to, or excuse me, I had the fortune of having an older brother who was the first of our family to go to college. And so I had a role model that was 7 years ahead of me that I could look to and say, okay, if he can do it, if he can go, then I can go. And I'm going to do it better. Because, you know,
seems like you're a little competitive here.
I'm competitive. I recognize I am competitive when it comes to not like interpersonally competitive, not really, but like when it came to feeling like I could do something or have an impact, I get competitive in that regard. So I told you I have a twin brother. My mother raised us to always see each other as not equal, but equitable. So what I mean by that is like, you both are different and it's okay that you're different. What's most important is your connection to each other and your support of each other in those differences. So mm-hmm. my mother would never pin us against each other like twins would always be, right? Mm-hmm. She never tried to make us do the same things. At times when we were younger, she tried to force us to wear the same clothes and we rebelled. So what she would do is get the same outfit, but in different colors. So we felt like we had some sense of individuality. But she taught me from a very early age, like really respect the identity and the difference in who you are. But what I internalized when it became about merit was if I wanted something and I knew that, and like, I felt like I could achieve it, or I felt like I wanted to go after it, I'm going to do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm going to do it better than you.
You probably could have. If math is your thing, math is so not my thing. I tell people, I'm like, you could beat me all day in math, but words, you can't beat me. Like, there's no way.
that's a bar. I love that. And for me, it was never math. It was pattern matching.
Pattern, yeah.
I often would say, when I go into a room, my superpower is feeling. So yeah. Empathy and being hyper aware of every interpersonal dynamic that's happening there. Mm-hmm. Some of that is realized through developmental trauma, just because of things that I've gone through in my life that have made me highly sensitive. Mm-hmm. And the other part is I'm an empath. I'm from a creative family. How we navigate between the feelings mm-hmm. was the power. Mm-hmm. If you can understand that power and harness it and shape it, which eventually for me became design, storytelling, experience. Mm-hmm. To me, that is what I would consider to be more of my like superpower or gift.
Yeah, that's incredible. And I think that when you talk about certain things like to do with your family and you talk about your mother, I can tell that she instilled such great, not only lessons, but characteristics that you have obviously taken into your adulthood and that are very meaningful to you. Like, you know, I feel it from you as you're speaking. I want to talk a little bit about your family, because I really think that to understand a person, you have to understand the sphere of influence that they were raised in. Can you tell me a little bit about your family?
Yeah. So my family, very colorful bunch. My immediate or my core, I describe that as my mother, my two brothers, my grandmother, who is no longer with us, and then my aunt, who is my mom's sister. So that's like my core. Growing up, it was my mom and my grandmother that raised three boys, three very different boys, I'd say. In terms of my family aesthetically, what I would describe my family as a very queer family. So queer both sexuality, but then also queer in terms of intellectualism and intersectionality when it comes to feminism and ideas around, you know, really challenging what are some of the patriarchal norms and how we live our lives and how we show up. Mm-hmm. I always say that I had the most amazing and loving father figure in my life, who was also a queer man, which is my older brother. And he was openly queer since he was young, mm-hmm. right? And my mom mm-hmm. gave him the space to be that and to be who he was. And not really understanding that he was going on his own musical journey, because he is a music artist and he's a producer and he's worked with Beyonce recently on the Renaissance Project and all those things. But like, he took after my mother, who when she was younger, she was a singer and she was in a traveling band, and she would take him to performances when he was very young. Mm-hmm. And, probably shouldn't have kids in the club, but like, you know, he would travel around with her and he would watch my mother perform. And the sequence on the glitter, the showmanship, this beautiful bassy type of like sondery voice, and not sondery, sultry. And yeah, that is who my older brother became. He became the next evolution of that, but went so much further than my mom could ever do, right? And then you have the twins, we call us the little ones, we're the twins, kind of be these rambunctious, high energetic kids who didn't know they struggled with ADHD. I got into math and science, maybe fifth, sixth grade, and that became a path for me. Mm-hmm. And I believe my twin brother was academically gifted too, but he decided very young age, he said, okay, that's Quentin's thing. I'm going to do my thing and I'm going to do what I want
to
do.
In order to observe, you're like, you have to have a 360 of what's going on around you all the time. You're also comprehending that 360 at the same time. And then you're making certain assumptions and you're attaching certain emotions to certain things. A lot is happening with a keen observer, I think.
Yeah.
And then you also really, you get really good at reading people. And once you get really good at reading people, the world is your actual oyster. You can go in and pitch to a company. You can read the room. You can, when you're going on a date, you can know if this girl's engaged or not, you know, like all these different things. I think it is a superpower. And I think it's something that people don't have a lot here. I remember like in growing up in Barbados, I feel like a lot of people have that kind of, it's a warmth, it's empathy, it's conscientiousness of your surroundings. And I find like sometimes here people are very like in their tunnel and towards their goals. And I lived in New York for a great part of my life. And that's very like an aggressive type, I need to get to my goals kind of thing, you know? And so that is a superpower. And I think it's a superpower that will serve you through and through, you know?
I was going to say, I think it's a superpower when you understand that it's a superpower.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I think growing up, sometimes it would be misclassified as sensitive,
right,
or sensitivity that would be inflated by gender or gender norms. I think the other piece was, what happens when you don't know how to fully adapt to your superpower?
Yeah.
I'm obsessed with like comic books and all that stuff. And when you have the young superhero that's getting their powers but haven't adjusted, they can cause more harm either to others or themselves if they don't really understand how to harness and to take care of that power. Mm-hmm. And for me, my greatest gift is also something that leads me to be in pain a lot when it comes to anxiety and feeling so much. So that's all I looked at.
I think that keen observers, empathetic people are very deeply feeling people. It is also the thing that it's the flip side of the coin, as I like to say, because the same thing that makes you an artist in this world, that you're able to hear certain sounds differently in a body of music, in a composition, is the same type of sensitivity, if you will, that makes you feel very deeply and has you process certain feelings very differently than other people, you know?
Yeah.
It's quite interesting. And to kind of go on that same tone, you know, this podcast is called How I Got Through It. And I wanted to ask you if you can share something that has been very difficult for you to go through.
Yeah, for me, it's been mental health and my ability to take care of myself. So I described a very intense little 14-year-old boy earlier. And what came with that intensity was, and not always being in environments that knew how to champion good health, healthy habits, self-care, rest being a big one. I overworked all the time. Mm-hmm. I asked for more. Give me more. Give me more. I got into MIT. And while it was a badge of honor, being at MIT also, if you've been there, shout out to my tech nerds, my beavers, we talk about our engineers, whatever. The intensity of that school, the intensity of the course load, the environment, you're just always on. You learn how to eat, sleep, work. And being the sensitive person I am, over time, I would wear down my immune system and my mental health over and over again. And it wasn't until my late 20s, I just hit a wall and I had a panic attack. The first time I'd ever recognized it as a panic attack. Never forget the date. It was December 11th. 2018, I had a panic attack and was rushed to the emergency room. I didn't know what my body was going through. I thought I was having a heart attack. Got there, and it was the first time in San Francisco, actually, which was wild, that I had a Black doctor come to me.
Mm-hmm.
So, he's Black. Okay, cool. In San Francisco? That's kind of funky. And, you know, he was very gracious, and he said, hey, I'm glad your vitals are checking out to be very normal. I did all the things and you seem to be okay and seem to be very healthy. Have you ever had a panic attack before? I said, what's a panic attack? And he explained it and he said, brought on by anxiety. I said, how do I fix it? He said, well, have you been to therapy before? I'm like, no, I thought I needed it, but cool. And he said, you might want to invest in a therapist and take it easy for the next couple of days, because your body, we don't know if this is just like something that you're experiencing now, or if you're going to continue to experience them if you continue to work in the way that you're working. It's like, okay, cool. I rested for like 2-3 hours the next day, but then I was like, you know what? I'm gonna go back into work. And I had another panic attack the next day. And then I tried it again the next day, had another one. I said, you know what? I'm not going to be having too many more of these. So let me go ahead and figure out how to get a therapist. So I think my panic attack happened Wednesday. I ended up having my first session on a Saturday. And I just remember that being the first day of the rest of my life. Because at that time, she did a full evaluation. She says, hey, you actually have an acute panic disorder, and you need to really think about how you're going to take care of yourself moving forward. And it was at one point in the journey, I started to take an antidepressant just to help my my mood stabilize and help me to regain like control of my body. But my panic attacks are very internalized and they spread throughout my entire body. And I feel paralyzed. So I can see and hear everything that's happening, but to a greater intensity, and my body, I can't function. So it's very dangerous also, depending on what context or what environment I'm in. But how I got through that was one day at a time. So I knew that I needed to make some radical lifestyle changes as it related to work. And we talked through in therapy around boundary setting. I ended up quitting my job actually, maybe a few months later, just because I started to recognize that I was outgrowing what was happening in that space and my relationship to that work. And I needed to take time to find myself and find what I'm actually being compelled to do. And I started off taking a 3-month sabbatical and turned into 9. And in that 9-month period, I was traveling. I was visiting spaces that were really important to me, Black spaces. I went home for a little bit. I traveled to go see friends. And I took my camera everywhere that I went, and I was documenting and I was writing and journaling. I did an exercise for myself where I said, okay, if I had a personal brand, what would it be? And I took myself through a branding exercise that I would take my clients through all the time, but I took myself through it and ended up sharing it with my next employer. And that's part of the reason I got the job. But there's this like really intentional pursuit of getting to know myself, because my thought at the time was, I will always have panic attacks. Now I have to live with a new normal. Mm-hmm. So if I'm going to live with this new normal, I got to just make sure that I'm doing what I really want to do, and I'm not compromising. I'm not, you know, running and internalizing things that don't belong to me. You know, some of the ideas around excellence and achievement and financial prosperity that I internalized as that little 14-year-old boy, I had to learn how to let them go and be okay with them existing outside of my body, because my body could no longer handle it. It couldn't hold it. I mean, it wasn't for me. And then I think the last thing I'll say about that period was I learned that the root of my anxiety was not in being afraid of the environments that I was in or I existed. It was the mismanagement of relationships in my life. So if I'm experiencing intense anxiety or panic, it's usually tied to some relationship that is out of order or out of whack in my life.
I feel that. I hear that all the time, but it is what you know sometimes, and you just don't know what you need, right? Until you take that time, look inward. I like to say, become the scientist of your cell and figure out what is out of whack. And then I find for me, a lot of the discomfort that I may feel, anxiety, the things that keep me up at night, happen because I know what I need to do and I haven't done it yet. With that relationship or with that project or something, I know what I need to do. And that space in between is where the suffering lies for me.
Yeah. That's weird, because That's where I actually live. I like that.
You like it.
I like that. What you described, the scenario,
yeah,
the anticipation to a breakthrough or a thing that I need to jump into. Like, I have maybe recognized in me, sometimes it's adrenaline, sometimes it's excitement, and learning to feel excitement for me was important. Learning to feel emotions. I wasn't emotionless, and I actually processed emotions really well, or at least my understanding of them. But how I actually dealt with my own emotions and the feeling, and giving myself permission to feel it, that's what's the hard part. That gives me anxiety.
Mm-hmm. What advice would you give to someone that's in that space right now?
If there is a way for you to take time to be very clear with yourself and be in a place where you can feel the thing, you know, something's wrong, and like you're really like feeling that something's wrong, and you're confident in that feeling, then finding ways to get support is huge. And the way you go about getting support, it could be self-help books. It can be, you know, I don't always recommend TikTok, but it could be TikTok. It could be a friend. It could be, you know, a therapist. But really get curious and obsessive about not wanting to experience that pain anymore. That, I think, it for me, reframing my issues through a lens of curiosity, like that kid who wanted to be the best, just to be the best. I'm now the kid who wants to be the best, but I want to know why I want to be the best. And if I know for me, my why is connected to, I don't want to feel this no more, then I'm going to try to be the best at trying to feel better.
That's really, really, really good advice. I want to shift the conversation because, well, there are a couple things that you said, and I really feel like I want to go there. I was looking at the analytics for the show this morning, and it's 83% women. When I listen to you speak, you really know who you are. You know, like, you know, to the core of yourself, who you are in this world. And as a man, that is very, very rare. Can you just talk to me about that? How did you harness that within yourself? How did you develop that? And are there things that remind you of who you are in your life?
You know, what I recognize, even in my male friends, a lot of them know who they are or have an idea of who they are, but don't always feel free or feel safe to express it. I think my maturation in my identity, and I'm still learning who I am and I'm still evolving, but my maturation came very early. I think being within that queer family that I talked about, but also being surrounded by women, particularly Black women, who, when I observed them and I watched them and would be a student to them, I'd say a student to the way in which they lived their lives, the challenges that they had to endure, what they had to overcome, what they carried, they were clear about why they did what they did, even if I didn't always agree with them, or even if I don't believe that they should be. I think just having really incredible women figures in my life, and then couple that with men who were strong men that were built by strong women, was, I think, a way for me to kind of inch by inch lean into this understanding that, yeah, I'm slightly different. I'm a little sensitive, and I think that's okay.
I want to like talk a little bit about your relationship, if that's okay with, with your wife. You said that true partnership and collaboration is where there's equity on both sides, and it's an inclusive practice of making space and giving them genuine space for freedom to be themselves while optimizing to learn with them. And you were actually talking about that with brands. But I thought, wow, you must actually do that in your marriage, because that's the ultimate partnership, right? where you both have equity together. And I really want to dive into that. We talked about your feelings. We talked about the way you process feelings. And I really want to dive into how do you take all those feelings and partner up with someone?
Yeah. You know? It takes a lot of work because I will say, as someone who felt deeply and feels deeply, I didn't have the best relationship with communicating my feelings. And it's been an evolution. Mm-hmm. I will say, though, part of my spiritual beliefs, particularly as I have grown up Christian, I would consider myself still a believer of Christ, but not necessarily of the Christian religion. And one of the earliest things that you hear or learn about is the story or the mythos of Adam and Eve, right? And the creation story of how man and then how woman was made. The separation of man became man and woman. And the reason I like go in that story was this idea of partnership or unity being at the center of, or it's the highest form of creation, in my opinion, or highest form of expression of creation or love or connectivity. And I don't believe necessarily in the hard lines of gender, but the expression of unity in partnership to me is the highest form of how we can experience God as human beings, in my own personal opinion. And so whether it's my partnerships within business, whether it's in my personal partnerships with my wife, whether it's my partnerships with my individual family members, to me, that is where I experience God and the fullest manifestation of God. And in that experience, that also is where I'm refined. And to me, living this life in pursuit of the highest form of those relationships. So it's a constant evaluation, reflection, building, tearing it down, doing it again, over and over again. Like, to me, that is what a relationship is. Mm-hmm. And if you're not evolving, if it's not becoming something different, it's not maturing for the context that it needs to be expressed, then it's not a real relationship. So I say all that to say that I met this high-spirited young woman when I was 20. I met her in college. So she went to Boston College and I went to MIT. And I don't know, some very interesting about this Trini. I had never met anyone
like
her.
She's from Trinidad?
Mm-hmm. She's from Trinidad, Tobago. She's half Trinidadian, half Panamanian. And she was raised in a Panamanian and Bajan household. So her adopted father is from Barbados.
Oh, awesome.
And then her mother is from Panama. So she grew up in an immigrant family, and very rich story that I hope that she has the pleasure of sharing with you at some point. But I just had never met anybody like her. And she had very similar experiences to me as a child, just from a very different vantage point, very different lens. She had the immigrant hustle about her, but she also had this vivacious Caribbean joy that just exuded and permeated from her body. And what stole my heart about this little Trini girl was her little winding waist, there was a confidence and a knowing, not just in her body, but in the culture that she was expressing through her movement. And it just was intoxicating, but it was a confidence that drew me to her. And, you know, over time we got to know each other and we made a commitment very early and we said, hey, we're going to be together, but we don't know where our lives are going to go. So we're going to be very intentional about at every step checking in and making sure that we're heading in the same direction. And if we need to go in different directions, that's okay. But we'll find our way back to each other if it's meant to be. And so at every major junction in our lives, whether it was when she moved to New York first, and we were in Boston at the time, when she moved to New York, she was scared to take that job because she's like, I don't know if I want to do long distance. And I said, listen, I'm in New York every other weekend. Don't worry about it. You go and take that job because that's where you need to be. And from that job, she was catapulted into this position that she would have never been in if she didn't take it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I was like, I'm fine. I'll find my way to New York. And I ended up getting another job 7 months later in New York that took me in a very different direction that I would have never done if we didn't were really intentional about saying, hey, go do you, go figure it out, and let's find and build this space. Well, find this common space, but then build this common space where we can come and just enjoy those pieces of each other. And then, you know, when I had the opportunity to move to California, she didn't know if she wanted to go. And she was like, I got to leave finance. I'm ready to leave finance, but I don't know what the right opportunity is. Mm-hmm. She ended up getting an opportunity maybe a few months before it was time for us to go. And it just worked out. And that catapulted her into another space, which was tech, that became a part of, very integral to her story. So there was always this alignment. There was like this trust that everything was going to be okay, this exercise of faith, but then also really being intentional about who were the couples in our lives that were pouring into our relationship and making sure that we have perspective. And it's ensuring that we're always checking in and making sure that we're on the same page. And that also relates to how we are emotionally. I've gotten to the place where I'm a lot better at communicating what I need. Mm-hmm. And I'm communicating it so that Ari feels like she has a decision whether or not she can fulfill that need. Right. If she can't, then we should talk about how we do it and the other way around.
I think hearing that too, I feel like you're both loyal to your own desires in a sense, or your dreams or goals that you have for your life. She's like, should I take this job in New York? Or, you know, like she's following the breadcrumbs of her life, but you guys have made a choice to be with each other. That's what I think about a relationship for me too. Like, I'm kind of like, this week was great. Like, you want to do this again next week? Like, you know, you know, like, let's just see how this goes, you know, because yeah. I so believe in freedom, you know, and I so believe in two whole people,
yes,
having their own dreams and their own passions and their own desires to make the world a better place, if that's yeah. what it is. I'm like, go off, do your thing. We'll have dinner later tonight. We could talk about it, you know? And I think that's the thing that I don't see much in the world. And I had to ask you, and we had to go there in this conversation. I want to take the conversation to where you are right now in your life. Actually, the reason that we even met virtually, I would say, is because of Spotify, because I saw them feature you on Outside Voices. And I looked up, I saw last night, you know, your speech in Cannes. And knowing now where you came from, how you were raised, the anxiety, the panic attacks, that entire journey as well, finding yourself, finding your voice, feeling empowered to use your voice. Talk to me about what those moments felt like. Mm. Because, you know, music was such a huge part of your life, and Spotify is a huge media company. So it's kind of like a full circle in a sense, you know, where you're not singing, but you're using your voice.
Yeah.
So
talk
to me about how those moments feel and just any thoughts that you have around that.
First of all, thank you for spending time in those various aspects of my life and connecting the dots in that way. I had a conversation with my mom shortly after the Cannes experience, and we both on the phone, just crying.
Yeah.
And she said, I know that little boy who was so scared to just speak in moments where, you know, whether it was we were in a group setting, whether it was at functions or at church, just didn't have the words, didn't know how to express himself, just get so scared. I just remember that little boy, and I don't see that little boy anymore. And I just cry. I'm like, Mom!
Oh my God.
You know, Mom just know how to say the thing. She's fantastic orator and just great storyteller. But for me, it was just a level of gratitude that I was chosen. I believe that I was chosen. And most people don't even know all the things that I've been through. So I was really excited to talk to you in this podcast, in the setting, to be able to just kind of peel back even more layers. Mm-hmm. I think that's how I'm going to go deeper, even with my business and how I want to build retrospect with my partner, Joy. there is such an importance to representation and to really being able to shine a light on people who just need to be seen. Mm-hmm. And I think when I was on stage, you know, the first thing that I remember saying, and I remember if I didn't say anything else, I'd first acknowledge that it was a gift. This is my gift. And I'm going to do it the way I do it. I'm going to say it the way I say it. I'm going to wear what I wear. Mm-hmm. I'm going to represent who I am right now, because it is a gift for me to occupy this space when there have not been, I don't believe, many people who are like me, who have had my lived experience, who look like me, have done so. I was the second Black jury president ever in the 70 years for design. And I'm probably the first ever from where I'm from. Mm-hmm. And people back at home don't even know what CAN is.
Right, right.
They don't know it. Could care less too, I'm sure.
But yeah.
Yeah.
What a great offering to the world to show up as you are with everything, right? Like your past, these, I want to say, trials and tribulations that you've been, your design, your aesthetic, show up all of who you are on a stage like that. It is an offering, I think, to the world. When I was looking at it last night, that's the thing I felt, and that's the thing I thought. I would even go as far to say that I think it's not only an offering to the world, I also think it's like an offering to God, you know, whatever you believe in.
Yeah.
That's when I look at a moment like that, that's what I feel. That's what I see. Mm. And I think it's important for you to see how or know how other people are seeing that moment for you, you know, and not knowing you, right? Like, yeah. Just feeling the energy of that moment. That's what I felt. I was like, oh, this is like an offering, and not only an offering to the world because he's bringing all of who he is, but an offering to God that has probably walked him through a lot of things, or the universe or the energy or whatever it is that you believe in, which also makes me feel like it is full cycle.
Mm. Yeah, man. I'll try not to cry. And in the way, as for me, the God that I took on that stage with me was the same God that was with me when I was hearing gunshots that night as a little 5-6-year-old boy and having to get under the table because it wasn't safe to stand up. It's the same God that was with me when I now realized that I had a panic attack while I was in college taking an exam. Didn't know it at the time, but in reflection, know it. But still took the exam and still got a B. It was the same God that, like, I was agonizing with when one of my best friends passed at 25 unexpectedly. It was the same God that was with me on stage. Mm-hmm. Same God. I think that's, oh my God. Ooh. What a gift.
Now we're both crying.
Yeah.
What's next for you?
So for me, I am very obsessively building retrospect with my business partner, Joy Kuda. It was an experiment when we started this idea that can we build a space for people who've had lived experiences like us, or even more diverse lived experiences, can they come together and be really passionate about being in community with each other, trying to do things differently against the grain, be innovative, but also do really impactful work, work that will change the world through the lens of communication, design, strategy, research, all those things. But at the end of the day, can we be challenged to be better, our better selves in a space like this, and then the byproduct be good work? So we call ourselves Retrospect. We believe reflection is the first step for not only transformation, but for impact.
That's incredible, impactful work too, because you're also changing the narrative of the way that people see these companies and see these brands and what the emotions that they associate with with these brands. That's really, really cool. And to wrap up, is there anything that, any message, anything that you think that we've left out, anything that you want to just leave the audience with? I'm just going to leave the floor open for you.
Okay. Through these questions here. I think talk a lot about musical family. Mm-hmm. I think our legacy is storytelling. Mm-hmm. Music is a vehicle for storytelling. Mm-hmm. And I was introduced to the concept of the griot in, you know, maybe 2018, 2019. And it was this West African traveling storyteller, right? Mm-hmm. So like the Senegalese people, that they go around and they sing songs, they do dances, they do this performative expression of historical knowledge and tribal knowledge. So they are the preservers of culture and preservers of the history of these very specific tribes and sets. But the way that they share this is through song, dance, and expression, artistic expression. And I was like, ooh, that feels real good.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, I might not be the musical one in the family, but I do connect to this identity, and my family kind of very much so operates in that, right? We feel our people, we feel the history of our people, and we want to be archivists and cultural folks who preserve culture. Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing. And then the second thing, the last thing, you mentioned Rick Rubin. I'm obsessed with super producers.
Yeah.
And that's a podcast for another day.
Yeah, I really did want to touch on that because I think, and you know what, listening to all the ingredients that make you up as a person, I think would help you to see an artist, see a brand, see people as they are. I also think that when you are able to see yourself as you are, then it's easier to recognize it in other people. Mm-hmm. And it's easier to recognize it in other people without an ego, or without having to change their perspective on something that they strongly believe to their core, right? So, and the same thing goes for music. So when they come in with a specific sound or something that's so unique to them, you're not wanting to change that. You're wanting to enhance that. And I feel like that's what he does, but he does it like a chameleon across the board because there's so many different types of artists that come before him, right? And I mean, we could talk about it if you want to. I mean, anything you want to share about that? I know music is a huge part of your life.
Yeah. I mean, Rick Rubin is, I think you were saying the example of the chameleon, because it is such an eclectic mix, and the body of work that he's amassed, and not even being musically trained and being able to really zero in on taste and sound. And he just has a gift. Where you have on the other side, which I love talking about, the Neptunes, specifically Pharrell and Chad. Their gift was to take an element of someone that was really special and then amplify based on their understanding of music. Mm-hmm. So 4-bar intro that they always put at the beginning of their songs as a signature.
Yeah.
And in the 2000s, pop, that was all the Neptunes, whether it was NSYNC, whether it was, you know, Britney Spears, whether it was Beanie Man, right? Like they had the ability to kind of transcend genres and make their sound the genre,
right?
Which is wild to me. So I think there's different approaches to being a creator. In my opinion, I maybe tend to be a little bit lean more towards the Neptunes than a Rick Rubin in terms of how I show up. Mm-hmm. But the idea of knowing where you end and where someone else begins is extremely important. And I love what you said about being super in tune with who you are, to give space and to, you know, provide the, you set the tone for how someone gets to discover who they are.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. That's incredible. I think it's such a great point to end on. Man, we covered so many topics.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. And hopefully, we can have many more conversations. We could be friends.
Yes.
I really, really love, I was listening to your, you know, episodes from your podcast, just kind of getting myself in the headspace, but like, I really love the journey that you take people on and the questions and then how you're framing it. And it's a space for people who might be in high positions to express themselves vulnerably and transparently in ways that they might not. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's like super aligned to the core of or the ethos of Retrospect, which right. I really, really love. And I would hope that I could support you on this journey, even from a like a occupational service or whatever capacity.
Definitely. I mean, I feel aligned in it too. Like I felt the same way when I was like researching this whole week, like just researching and getting to know your backstory. And even like, I was thinking as I was reading some of the things, like even that Octavia Butler quote that you put up or just the way you frame words, I'm like, I could feel the feeling in the words, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The way that they're put together. And I think that's something really different. Maybe it's those in-betweens that I am attuned to or whatever, but listen, a great conversation for us to have going forward. And I enjoyed this conversation too, that I think that people are going to get so much out of your story, where you came from and where you are, and man, all the things that we touched on in between. So thank you for just spending your time with me today too.
Absolutely. Anytime. And again, thank you.